In a certain case.
In a certain case.
Tattva.
Tattva.
The fundamental principles.
The fundamental principles.
Avamarsena.
Avamarsena.
By reflecting upon.
By reflecting upon.
Nivittam.
Nivittam.
Avoided.
Avoided.
Kayam.
Kayam.
Fear.
Fear.
Omanam.
Omanam.
Great.
Great.
Anivritta.
Anivritta.
Nimitattva,
Nimitattva,
since the cause,
since the cause,
Una,
Una,
again,
again,
Pratyavatistate,
Pratyavatistate,
it appears,
it appears.
Translation by A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Even if the great fear of bondage is avoided by mental speculation and inquiry into the fundamental principles, it may still appear again, since its cause has not ceased. Purport. Material bondage is caused by putting oneself under the control of matter because of the false ego of lording it over material nature. Bhagavad Gita 7:27 states, Ichcha Dvesha Samutena. Two kinds of propensities arise in the living entity. One propensity is ichcha, which means desire to lord it over material nature, or to be as great as the Supreme Lord. Everyone desires to be the greatest personality in the material world. Dvesha means envy. When one becomes envious of Krishna, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one thinks, why should Krishna be the all-in-all? I am as good as Krishna. These two items, desire to be the Lord and envy of the Lord, are the beginning cause of material bondage. As long as a philosopher, salvationist, or voidist has some desire to be supreme, to be everything, or to deny the existence of God, the cause remains and there is no question of his liberation. Devahuti very intelligently says, one may theoretically analyze and say that by knowledge he has become freed, but actually, as long as the cause exists, he is not free. Bhagavad Gita confirms that after performing such speculative activities for many, many births, when one actually comes to his real consciousness and surrenders unto the Supreme Lord Krishna, then the fulfillment of his research and knowledge is actually achieved. There is a gulf of difference between theoretical freedom and actual freedom from material bondage. The Bhagavatam 10.14.4 says that if one gives up the auspicious path of devotional service and simply tries to know things by speculation, one wastes his valuable time. Kli shanti ke ye kevala bodha labdhaye. The result of such a labor of love is simply labor, and there is no other result. The labor of speculation is ended only by exhaustion. The example is given that there is no benefit in husking the skin of an empty patty. The rice is already gone. Similarly, simply by the speculative process, one cannot be freed from material bondage, for the cause still exists. One has to nullify the cause, and then the effect will be nullified. This is explained by the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the following verses. So this verse is building on the verse that we did yesterday, 19, where Devahuti is asking the question, how is the soul who is passive, a passive performer of activities, how does the soul become free from being bound up by the material nature? So it's important to understand what the word passive actually means in order to understand this verse. So what does this word passive actually mean? Who can tell me? What does that mean? You.
Quiet.
What?
Quiet.
I don't understand.
Quiet.
Quiet.
Quiet. A little bit, yeah. What else? What does passive mean? When a person is passive, yes.
Not active.
Not active, okay. What else?
Inert.
Inert, okay. So, I looked it up in the dictionary, just to be sure, and in the dictionary it describes the word passive as accepting or allowing what happens or what others do without an active response or resistance to it. So it's also defined as being influenced or acted upon or affected by some external force, cause, or agency, or being the object of action rather than the cause of action. So this is the reason why we don't get out of the material nature. A passive person allows the material nature to have its way with us without trying to interject anything Krishna conscious in the mix. And in this way, they become controlled by the material nature. And looking around, you have a lot of children. I also have grandchildren, and I know when I'm with those children, if you don't interject any Krishna conscious or organized activity, what will happen? What happens, mothers, when you don't engage your children in Krishna's service? What will they do? Yeah, exactly. They want to watch TV, they want to chew bubblegum, they want to go all kinds of places, and they run riot all over the place. So the mind is like that. If you don't intentionally intervene, the material energy will have its way with us. So in order to understand how to get out of this material influence of the material nature, we have to understand how to read the modes of material nature to understand the symptoms and know how and when I am covered by these modes. In the Bhagavad Gita, it confirms prakriti kriyamanani unai kamani sarvasha ahankara vimaratma tartaham itimanite. The spirit soul, bewildered by the influence of false ego, thinks himself the doer of activities that are actually carried out by the three modes of material nature. So, some of us may have had the experience that when we are walking down the street, or we may, I don't know, you're shopping or something, and you hear music coming out of somebody's boombox, or it's coming out of a restaurant. It's not a Krishna conscious song at all. But you may find yourself 5 or 10 minutes later with that song going in your head. It's ruminating. And you know, you don't want it to be there, but it's there. Somehow your ear has recorded it. It's like a recording machine. Or you may see something in the material world that has left a deep impression on your mind. And hours later, you're thinking about that thing, and you don't want to be thinking about it, but it's been recorded, and so it's in your mind. As Bhaktivedanta yesterday mentioned, I'm a professional chaplain, so I train people how to accompany compassionately people who are undergoing crisis in some incredible, unimaginable suffering conditions. And it's a real skill to be able to walk out after 8 hours of seeing and hearing unlimited traumatic experiences with people and not go home and now you're trying to go to sleep and you remember all those things. And it causes a lot of anxiety, even though they haven't happened to me, but to ruminate about the anxieties of people who are suffering terribly in the material world, not knowing that they're completely controlled by the material energy, and that's the cause of their suffering. So one has to be intentional about how to recognize that, oh my goodness, I'm anxious. So that means I'm captured, I'm captivated somehow or other by the ones of material nature. Prabhupada used to describe our temples as Vaikuntha, which is a place free from anxiety. So when we're firmly situated in Krishna consciousness, we don't feel that sense of fear because we feel that Krishna is protecting us. So there's so many things in the material world that causes anxiety. For example, if I own a house or an apartment, some of us here may be owning a house or apartment. What kinds of anxieties might you have when you own a house or an apartment, own something, or a car? What kinds of things that you're worried about related to your house? What are you worried about your house?
Light bill.
You need to speak a little bit.
Water usage.
What does it cause you anxiety to use water?
My mom thinks I use too much water when I bath.
Okay, so your anxiety is really your mother's anxiety about the water. Why would she be anxious about the water? Do you have to pay for it? In Australia, do you have to pay for water?
Yes.
Okay, well, and so dad is worried about how much money it's going to cost while you're wasting water, right? Brushing your teeth and everything else. What else can be a cause of anxiety in ownership? Yeah.
Rent.
You have to pay rent, yeah. And where are you going to get the money to pay that rent?
Job.
You have to get a job, yeah. And then what happens? You got to get a job and you have to work with people that you may not like. You may not like your boss, you may be not very friendly, or they may, your co-workers may not be very friendly. So there's a whole lot of anxiety around meeting the status quo. I was also thinking of sometimes you have termites and rodents and rats, you have to worry about keeping things clean. And then if you own a house, sometimes the roof gets ruined, now you have to pay to fix the roof, and I don't know what else. There's so many things. There's so much anxiety. And then you have to pay taxes, I guess. Do you have to pay taxes? You know, so right for your own time in America, you have to pay taxes on your house, even if you own it. So you might not have a mortgage, but you have to pay the taxes. And so there's another anxiety there. So constant anxiety when you are working in the real world. And there's a saying that whatever you own, owns you. And this is really true in the sense that if you think about anything that you actually own, possess, even if it's a nice computer or a briefcase or something you like, you're always worried about it getting lost or someone stealing it, so now you have to protect it in so many ways. And there's anxiety there. So we can become so caught up in taking care of all of these things that we have, these possessions, that we become completely forgetful of who we are and what our permanent identity is as a spiritual being. And many people spend their entire lifetimes accumulating things, protecting those things, getting rid of those things and getting new things, and then protecting those things and getting... So much anxiety. So Deva Bhuti, she's asking this question, how can a soul become free from this material nature who actually binds us in so many ways? Because as soon as you enter into ownership and working in the material world, you're bound up in so many ways. So Lord Chaitanya, he says in his Shikshashtakam prayers that by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, all the dirty things of the heart become cleared from a person's consciousness. And when this dust becomes cleared away, then immediately the blazing fire of material existence stops. And then when a person's blazing fire of material existence, which is really anxiety that burns like fire, then that stops, then a person can start to see and enjoy life as it is. We become free from false ego. And we are able then to easily focus our mind and our hearts on the lotus feet of Krishna. It sounds very simple, I know. I've been practicing this for over 40 years, and so in some ways it gets more easy, and then there are new things, new obstacles, and new tests that we have to experience. So it's a kind of a moving target, moving towards full surrender. So you think you're making progress, and then there's another area where you realize that you haven't offered to Krishna. So in order to become free, we have to understand the modes and how they are working in ourselves and in the association that we have. Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, just as a refresher, the mode of goodness being purer than the others is illuminating, and it frees a person from all sinful reactions. Those situated in the mode, that mode, become conditioned by this sense of happiness. The prophet explains that the effect of developing the mode of goodness in the mature world is that a person becomes a little wiser than other people who are conditioned by the other modes. And they also have a tendency to feel like they're more advanced in the material knowledge. He uses the Brahmin, or the priest or teacher, as the representation of someone who might be situated in the mode of goodness. And Prabhupada explains that such a person experiences happiness because they're more or less free from sinful reactions. They're not trying to accumulate something. They're not trying to make their body comfortable in so many ways by having a palatial living situation. They're not endeavoring to eat tasty food. It comes, it goes. It's accepted whatever is coming without a lot of endeavor. And a person then can, in a mode of, situated in the mode of goodness, can absorb themselves in the topics of hearing about Krishna. And when they do that, when a person is able to absorb their consciousness completely in topics of Krishna, then you lose completely the taste for any other topic. You can make an experiment of this. You know, I'm working, so I have to create time, like a Jewish person has a Sabbath on Saturday. They don't work, they don't do anything. So I take time out in my week where I have to sit. I go to the park, I completely isolate, and I spend the entire day absorbing my consciousness in Krishna's words. Because if I don't do that, I become completely overwhelmed by my work. And what I notice is my consciousness moves from the mode of doing action, which is what you do when you're working, and when you slow down enough to just be situated in the mode of goodness, even for a day, you completely lose your attachment or attraction for doing all kinds of things, for being busy. You're completely satisfied. So the main obstacle or the main challenge with being situated in a mode of goodness, and maybe some of us have experienced this already even living in the temple, is that we tend to think that we're better than other people. We think, oh goodness, you know, I'm Krishna conscious, and look like I look at those poor people, they are not able to practice so strictly like me, and I'm wiser than other people. And then you fall down because you become proud. As we know, pride comes before the fall. But in fact, Prabhupada explains that when a person becomes truly humble, then all the purports of Vedic scripture become revealed. So you completely lose all your merit, you know, in the mode of goodness if you are smugly thinking that I am better than everyone else. Bhaktidas was talking yesterday a little bit about the Rath Yatra coming up and how important it is to reach out and help those who are not Krishna conscious. And the reason we do that, yes, we do that because it's compassion. It's a way of showing our compassion. But it also protects us from the self-righteousness of smugly hoarding Krishna consciousness for ourselves. Prabhupada calls such a person a kripana, a miser. You have some valuable thing, keep it for yourself. And most of us probably will admit that the most valuable thing we have is the work of Srila Prabhupada and the darshan of Shri Radhabalava and Jagannath. So it's really important to protect ourselves from becoming proud as people situated somewhat in the mode of goodness to help others in Krishna consciousness. Then, in the talks between Sati and Shiva in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's described that although the six qualities, education, austerity, wealth, beauty, youth, and heritage are for the highly elevated, one who is proud of possessing them becomes blind, and thus he loses his good senses and cannot appreciate the glories of great personalities. So this is the tricky piece. You know, many of us might be educated. We might have gone to school. I spent 10, 15 years going to school. I was in the ashram for 30 years. And then I moved into learning to study comparative religions. I got a degree in divinity in the seminary. I got a master's degree in patient counseling. And so many different degrees. And over time, what I realized is that thoughts are things, and they're like possessions. The more learning you accumulate, the more you want to have. Because things are so interesting here in this material creation. Krishna has made so many interesting things to learn that you can go on forever in the material world learning all kinds of things. You can learn guitar, you can learn to swim, you can learn to ski, you can learn to, I don't know what, garden, you can paint, and there's so many things you can do forever and ever and ever and never get out of this material world, going from one new thing to the next. And so, you become cluttered like a hoarder. We have in America somebody called hoarders. I don't know if you have that in Australia, but they're people who they can't let go, they can't throw things away, so their houses are so cluttered they have no place to eat, They can't lay down, they can't sit, because there's just so much junk in the house. It's a mental illness. So Prabhupada describes that the mode of ignorance, which is the third mode, we haven't talked about the passion, but the mode of passion is born of unlimited desires and longings, and because of this, he embodied living in these bound and fruitive action. We just talked about doing and doing and doing and trying to get something. But then in the mode of darkness, which is born of ignorance, the delusion of all embodied, delusion of all embodied living entities, the results of this motive are madness, indolence, and sleep. And so we see this in someone who is addicted to intoxication, who's addicted to sleep, and somebody like a hoarder, who's not only hoarding material things, but we can become a hoarder of thoughts and trying to accumulate even material knowledge. So this mode of ignorance is the opposite of the mode of goodness, but Prabhupada explains that we cannot even get out of this cycle of birth and death as long as we are situated in any of these modes. We have to come to the stage of being able to tolerate happiness and distress, heat, cold, so many things. You have to be able to tolerate the urges to speak, the urges to overeat, the urges to obey the mind. So where we started was the notion of being passive in the material world. That means just letting the material energy, the mode of passion, the mode of ignorance dictate, and you becoming the obedient servant. And we see that when we try to sit calmly and chant our rounds, immediately the mind will be starting to think of what happened yesterday, and maybe what I'm going to do after I finish my rounds, and maybe you're formulating a shopping list already, or so many things. He said that, she said that, and I didn't like it that they said that. Why did they say do this, that? And so we become carried away. So if we don't take control of our minds and bring it back to being situated on the self, then we are passive, and we're not going anywhere. You know, you're just what Prabhupada called it, digging and piling. You know, you're digging a hole over here and piling the dirt over there, and then you don't know what to do with the dirt over here, so you dig another hole, put that in the dirt in the hole, and now you have another hole, you better fill it up. So we do have to come to the mode of goodness at least. And from there, then we can hope to see things as they are, engage everything in Krishna's service, absorb our minds in Krishna, and develop our love in this way. So it's really important to be aware of what the modes are. In order to be free from the modes, we have to understand what they are, and we have to notice or be aware of ourselves and notice, oh gosh, I'm really busy right now. I'm working really hard to do that thing. Is it really an over-endeavor to do that thing? Sometimes even in Krishna consciousness, we get all these ideas of all these projects we're going to do, and now we have a big project. We don't have time to hear and chant about Krishna. I don't know if you have that experience. In Los Angeles, we have that experience. Is that, you know, the movement started with a pure devotee sitting down. If you notice, Prabhupada did nothing but vibrate sound. You didn't see him doing anything else. He was just vibrating sound. He's vibrating, translating books, and then someone else transcribed them. He chanted at Tompkins Prayers Park. A bunch of hippies showed up, and they did things. Everything he did was moved by sound vibration. So we actually really have to, all of us, get to that place. We can get really lost in expanding on the material level, even in Krishna consciousness. And we need to be aware. I'm working really hard, but I'm not chanting very nicely. I'm schnickety schnacky, schnickety schnacky, schnickety. Oh, I'm done, fine, and now I can go scrub the floor over there. That's nice. We can also chant while we're cleaning, and we can chant while we're driving. But we do have to understand the underlying goal of our endeavor is that we always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. And if you get to the end of the literature of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you will see this whole process boils down to hearing, chanting, remembering, and serving. I heard on a tape recently where Prabhupada said, we think in the material world that service means using our hands. I mean, that's that we take broom, we speak, we tinker with something, we bring something to someone. But Prabhupada explained that the service in Krishna consciousness means to use our ears and our tongue. That's what it's spiritual service. So, okay, so we might be using our hands to do some service that we like to do according to our propensity. So while you're doing that service, don't forget to hear a chant. Even off your beads, if you don't have beads, you can at least sing a song. And I know mothers very often have their both hands full with children and cooking and laundry, and husbands are busy driving cars and going places. Try to see how you can add to whatever you're doing the hearing and chanting. And then the children will benefit and the whole thing becomes your devotional service. So I'm going to stop here. I'm aware of the time and I know that people are hungry at this time and don't want to go over. Are there any questions or comments? Somebody would like to add something? Narayani, would you like to add something? No? Anything else? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think like our biggest enemy is complacency.
Yeah.
We're always thinking, you know, I'll become Christian, fully Christian conscious a bit later, but I've got a lot of things to do. So.
Yeah, and that is. And often, we saw this, I studied a lot, and I work a lot with Christians. And some people say the worst thing that Christians could do is to worship Jesus without following his instructions. And actually what we're meant to be doing is worshiping the instruction of this pure devotee. We worship him, yeah, we offer flowers, and that's one form of worship. The true worship is to do what he said and to live his instructions. So we can get really busy and artistic and flamboyant and put beautiful garlands on Prabhupada and make all kinds of arrangements and flower things and cloth things and gold and silver. It's all gorgeous and it does attract our hearts. But what is most pleasing to Prabhupada is that we do what he said. And yes, we can become complacent and be fooled by all the razzmatazz we do, thinking, oh, I'm doing such a nice thing for Prabhupada, he'll be so pleased. But if you really want to please Prabhupada, you want to read what he says, first of all, you've got to read the books to know what he wants us to do, and then try to do those things. And he says so many things. But that is the most pleasing thing, not to be complacent. Read and do what he says. Anything else? Yeah.
Did you mention about how it is hard to hear people's problems and not to get carried away by it? And you said you have follow some methodology or something that after hearing 6 hours of it, you come out of it. So can you?
Well, some of my students, I train chaplains, and they have a hard time seeing some of the things you see. The main way to let go of some of other people's, not taking other people's baggage, certainly we need to be compassionate. We need to be a listening ear for people. We need to understand that I too have difficult, I'm experiencing my karmic reactions. We don't want to be judgmental because tomorrow it will be me who needs a listening ear. But the main thing that I've experienced in a hospital is that you may go into someone's room today and they're in despair. They just had their leg amputated. Or they've just been told they're going to die in a week. And they're completely in despair or something terrible. And you are going home worried about it. And you come back the next thing, I've got to go see this person again. I'm so worried about it. And they're completely fine. So what I've learned is that you are not the essential piece. It's Krishna. You're just an agent of Krishna. And Krishna's not depending on you only to communicate with this person. Krishna's in everyone's life luring them back to him, and he has a unique way of doing it. Sometimes we get a kick, and sometimes we get a pat. So you might just show up in somebody's home or in the hospital or wherever they are in a moment where they're getting a kick. But Krishna's not all suffering. Radharani also comes with a pat somewhere. But you might not see it because you left before that came. So Krishna is very merciful. It's not just all suffering. Thankfully, there's also blessing. So I have to remind myself that. And sometimes I have to go back. And another thing I do often as I create a ritual when I leave the hospital, I will take, if there's someone who's had a really terrible story that you just have never heard of anything, children, especially of small children with horrible things, child abuse and gang shootings and stuff. I will take their name, you know, we get the medical record number, their name, and I will light a candle, you know, and I will offer them back to Krishna. It's for my sake only. Because I know Krishna's already in the room, I'm not at all needed. If I didn't come in the room, Krishna would send someone else if he needed to have a good word or a kind heart. Someone else does, not depending on me. But for my sake, to offer them back to Krishna, I create a ritual. And I say a prayer, Krishna, now I trust that you are there. You are going to take it from here. That's just a little shaking off the carbon. Any other questions? Does that answer your question?
Yes.
You mentioned already how you sometimes isolate yourself just to get your consciousness in the air. How important it is to isolate yourself. Even you sometimes with devotees, you feel like you're not doing the Krishna consciousness thing properly just because you can't collect your own thoughts. Because you keep missing something from the proper, even devotees. How important it is to isolate yourself when even you're working as well at the same time. The companies of devotees. Is it important to isolate yourself for a day or a week?
Well, it depends on you, and it also depends on the context if you have the luxury of doing that. I live in an ashram apartment. I'm in New Dwarka, so I have a little freedom because I work. I don't do I give class and things in the temple, but I don't have a regulated service that way. And when I did live in the temple, I don't know, are you living in the temple? Are you? Yeah. So the trick is to absorb the mind somehow. You know, even if you're doing devotional service, if your mind is all over the place, you're not really, you know, it's all about consciousness. So for me, if I don't get up really early before everybody else gets up and chant a whole bunch of rounds, I can't do it later very well. I try. I have to go to work. So I get up at 2 o'clock. I go across the temple, I leave for work at 3:30 to avoid traffic in LA and start my day at 6:30. And in that way, I get a really solid, my japa done, I get some reading done, and if I don't do that, then my mind is not fixed. And then I'm carried away, you know, anybody who comes in the room, now into their thing, and whatever comes in, I'm highly impressionable. And you become passive, modes of passion and ignorance take you away. So about isolating yourself, if you have the luxury of time to go and sit in nature where there's grass and fresh air or the beach or somewhere where you can even spend an hour or two really reading Prabhupada's books. But if you're only with other people, the way to do that is to read to each other. You know, if somebody might be cooking or cutting vegetables in the kitchen. I know they put music on and that's nice. I used to, I was a cook for 30 years in ISKCON. And the way I helped us in the kitchen was in the morning when I get up at 1:30 or 2, I would read out loud for an hour in a tape. Then I bring the tape to, we had cassettes in those days, I bring it to the kitchen and that would be the tape we learned. We learned, so we went through the whole Bible time that way. But if you're just with your family or something, read to each other. And then the whole group becomes focused. So somehow, that's the purport. How do you interject, don't just passively, you know, wobble around and let the material energy have its way with you. Think, how can I bring sound vibration? Krishna's appearing in this age of sound. How do I make more sound vibration in this environment? You can sing it, chant it, vibrate it, put a tape on, but that's how we get there. But for me, it's important because I teach all day, every day, and it's not all Krishna Katha, it's a whole different way of teaching. Although it is Krishna conscious, because I'm out as a devotee. But isolating yourself sometimes is a good thing. Yes?
I think how you said it took so many degrees that you have learned so much. What was the main reason you chose this path to develop your consciousness?
That's a really long story, but basically, I was living in Mayapur, and I had two sons. One lives here, Mani, and I have another one who was, at that time, probably 10 years old, and I was teaching in the Mayapur Gurukul, My health was not. I was living on the Ganges. I got a very bad cough, and I came back to get my visa updated in America. Decided to stay because my son wasn't learning to read fast enough. I felt like he was in the Gurukul. It was a very good Gurukul, but he was way behind. And I imagined as an American boy living in India, well, like, you may want to someday go to America. You better know how to read. You know how to read something. So I decided to go back to school. I had studied religion before I joined the Hare Krishna movement. And so I went back and finished that degree while he went to Irma. Irma comes through here sometime. And she lived about 45 minutes from the college I went to. So she brought him up to speed in his academia. So I went to school and finished my bachelor's degree in religion. And then Madi, who is living here now, wanted me to move to LA so we could be a family again, because we'd lived in Gurukuls and everywhere else. And so we moved and lived together, and then I went to, in America, not like in the temple, people don't pay you because you can get up at 3 o'clock in the morning. It's not a marketable skill that I can go to the Western and say, well, can you hire me in order? I'm really good at washing pots, and I'm really good at, you know, really good at cutting vegetables. I can make great flower gardens. And I couldn't find a job that was going to hire me to do that. And I needed to be able to support my family. So for me, in order to work for money, I had to find a work that could go compatible with Krishna consciousness. So study of religion and teaching religion, comparative religion, included Hare Krishna philosophy. I was able to study and speak and teach that way. And then I moved over into chaplaincy because I got really tired of studying with my head. It became very dry, boring. You know, you just can only study so much. And we're a bhakti tradition. We're about the heart. It's about 12 inches from your head to your heart. It's probably the longest journey you'll ever make to go from here to there. So I switched into the chaplain track, spent a year on the Mexican border in a hospital, seeing death every day in the emergency room, and it completely transformed the way I understood Krishna consciousness, to be able to confront death every day. Maybe tomorrow we'll talk about that in our class. Anything else before we stop? One last thing, yes.
Related to what you asked about isolating ourselves, and how do we get back on a Monday morning with so much of things to do after you have isolated? I'm a bit fearful because I might lose my skills if I'm not keeping up to date.
Oh, well, for 8 hours, you think you're going to lose your skills?
Because work life has got its own demand.
Yeah.
Now, how does this isolation help me to be more productive at work?
Well, I don't know if you're familiar with the managing guru, Stephen Covey. I don't read him much, but I heard one time that he said that you have to sharpen the saw. So people who work and work and work and work and work all the time and never take time to care for themselves. We have even in the Bhagavad Gita it says, in order to be a yogi, you have to be equibalanced in eating, sleeping, working, and recreating. There has to be a moment where you're putting some energy into yourself. So that's all I'm saying, is that you need to take time. When you burn out, we call it compassion fatigue, you know, and we're a preaching movement. So you're helping others, helping others, helping others, helping others. In the meantime, you're not reading the books and you're not helping yourself. So you have to, even in an airplane, they tell you, first put your mask on before you help the next guy. You're going to die, it's suicide, spiritual suicide. So you're not losing your skills, they just become sharper. And you come back and you've had a break for a little bit, read, maybe. Take a nap or walk in nature or something, you come back with a new fresh and you're much more creative. You can get work done in half the time because you're not just pushing yourself. Yeah, we need to stop. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.